Being a doctor at Cabanatuan was a daunting and horrible challenge, but it was never dull. The medicines at the camp's disposal were scarcely more than placebos and folk remedies. The doctors labored with improvised equipment and conducted operations with nothing more than what was termed vocal anesthetic. It won't hurt much. They constantly experimented and guessed their way through procedures. They concocted dysentery palliatives from guava leaves, cornstarch, and charcoal made from charred coconut shells. They cleaned out wounds with maggots. Dentists filled cavities with melted-down 50-cent pieces, crafted dentures from carabao teeth, and performed oral surgery with a crude drill powered by foot pedal. Dr. Ralph Hibbs, who spent most of his time at Cabanatuan in charge of the tuberculosis ward, built his own Rube Goldberg pneumatic contraption for collapsing lungs. Once the immediate crisis of mortality began to dissipate in the fall of 1942, once dysentery and malaria and other causes of mass death were brought under a modicum of control, a whole new crop of ailments emerged. Often they were not illnesses exactly, but odd concatenations of symptoms and syndromes without clear identity. Over time, the camp increasingly became a kind of freak show of medical exotica. The whole place was a pathological museum, said Dr. Hibbs. Most doctors would never see such cases in their entire life. Never before had physicians encountered such graphic and strange illustrations of the effects of long-term vitamin and mineral deprivation. The Cabanatuan doctors found themselves peering into the abyss of human physiology. Starvation had worked its way down to the biochemical substratum, down to the level of enzymes and amino acids, down into the cells of the brain. The human body, it seemed, was full of trap doors and trick connections that were now slowly revealing themselves. The doctors entertained uncomfortable questions. What organs are the first to play out when a certain mineral is withheld? At what point during the process of nutritional strangulation does the body, and even the personality, begin to disintegrate and fray? With the last phantom residues of nutrition burning away, the prisoners came up against the margins of their own chemistry. People lost their voices. People lost their hair. They lost eyes. They lost hearing. They lost the signal of their peripheral nerves. Their teeth fell out. Their skin fell off. They developed strange ringings in their ears. Rank metallic tastes soured the backs of their tongues. Their fingernails grew brittle and developed strange textured bands that, like growth rings in trees, reflected times of relative plenty or abject dearth. Scurvy, pellagra, rickets. These were the ordinary ailments, and they were all experienced early on. The advanced cases of beriberi, from which so many men suffered, were largely attributable to the polished rice that the Japanese insisted on feeding the prisoners. The highly milled rice was devoid of the outer husk or pericarp, which was the only part of the grain that contained the vitamin B which the men so desperately needed. In a world already overburdened with grotesque distinctions, the prisoners came to realize that there were two kinds of beriberi, wet and dry, and that an individual could have both kinds at the same time. Wet was the more dramatic and hideous variety. It was the form of the disease that caused extremities to swell up to often drastic proportions. Yet dry beriberi could be just as painful and debilitating. It made the nerve endings of the feet throb and ache with a kind of hot electric tingling. Prisoners by the score would stay up much of the night, lying on their backs, kneading and rubbing their feet with their legs in the air. Like thousands of others, Bert Banks suffered peripheral neuropathy on his soles that never went away, and his feet throbbed so intensely that he had to cut open his shoes. Those afflicted with dry beriberi walked with a strange, bird-like gait known as the Cabanatuan shuffle. They wildly flung out their hands with each mincing step, in an instinctive reflex to balance themselves while also absorbing some of gravity's shock.